Hey everybody, welcome back to Game Store Prophets, your podcast that talks a little bit about God and a little bit about the games, both of which we love. My name is Jeff Romo, and I am joined by the guest host, who is...
Mr. Daniel Fisher.
Oh, congratulations to me, because I get a guy like this to be on the podcast with me. Now kids, listen to your Uncle Jeff. We don't want you to panic, alright? Perna is going to be around. He's going to be here in a couple episodes. He's doing En-ROADS stuff. We've got him locked in the dungeon. He's processing. He's creating fake web IDs. He's putting together stuff for En-ROADS Ministries. So he's a busy bee. That's for sure. But, Daniel, I know you're going to do a great job. I can feel it in the force.
Well, talking about the force.
No, don't talk about the force.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. Let's talk about
Have you seen the Force Awakens yet?
Why, I certainly have. Kids, we're going to have you make sure that you put on your spoiler muffs if you feel that you do not wish to talk about this. But we won't go into too spoilery territory. But, Daniel, I want to get your impressions. I value your opinion.
Okay,
what did
well,
you think?
I'll tell you this. My favorite, up until this point, you know, I understood why 1, 2, and 3 had to be there. It was backstory. It had to be told. 4, 5, and 6, my favorite was 6, Return of the Jedi. I just love Return of the Jedi.
Right.
This movie has literally blown that out of the water.
So let me back up here. Like you said, Return of the Jedi. So what about it drew you to that one? Because everybody says Empire, right?
Yeah, well, everybody says Empire, but I mean, Return of the Jedi, you've got Luke coming back from who knows where, and he is obviously a lot more powerful than he was in Empire. And yeah, you know, we're on the moons of Endor, and like everything's green. Green's my favorite color too. So, and I love that part. And you know, it's just the story of the redemption of the father. You know, his father finally is like turns back to the light side, and right before he dies, and you can see his Force ghost there with Obi-Wan and Yoda and all of them. And it's just it was a better story for me. Yeah,
cool.
I loved it. That's just all part of it.
I hear that. I spent some time before I went and saw the film watching the originals just to kind of like get myself into frame, right? I didn't watch the prequels. I wanted to stay away from that as much as I can. I could probably just cut and paste the things I've done, you know, like they have the Phantom, what's it called? The Phantom Edit out there. That's actually decent. You can actually suffer through it. But yeah, when I got into the film, I was just like, I think I mentioned this in the last podcast. I was like, I was transported back to the age of 10, right? So okay, so now you're saying that Force Awakens is the best one for you now.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'll tell you this. We made our kids watch all 6 episodes before we went to the movies.
Wow.
We forced them to watch them. I mean, it was almost to the point of child abuse. Because they're like, we don't want to watch this. We want to go watch Minecraft videos on YouTube. And I'm like, no. We're going to watch this because you're seeing the movie. You have to know the full story. But when we get to the theater, I'm sitting next to my son. And we're just sitting there staring at the screen the entire time. And I could see in his 5-year-old eyes that this was probably the most epic movie I've ever let him watch. And, you know, I've raised my children on Star Wars and Indiana Jones. I mean, You can't get any more epic than that. And then he's just sitting there and I whisper over. He's like, do you need to pee? And he's like, yes. It's like, well, do you want to go to the bathroom? No. I'll just pee on myself.
Shut up. true story, man. True story. Like, about an hour into it, I had to go to. I champed, man. Like a boss, I held that stuff until the end.
I was about 45 minutes to the end, and I'm sitting here like, because I got a small bladder anyway. I got the bladder of a child. And as you see, have seen from the cup that I drink my water from, I had that entire thing full of soda, and it was almost empty. And I'm like, I gotta go, but if my son's gonna hold it, I'm gonna hold it too.
You have to be the leader of this household in all aspects, including urination. Yeah. Folks, I don't know how we got to this point, but, yeah, we'll soldier through this one. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the aspects of that film just brings back the thrill of our childhood, that epic, those epic years, you know, when anything is possible, anything can happen. Yeah, that's how it totally blew me out of the water.
We're gonna realize one day that Snoke is Jar Jar Binks.
I certainly hope not. If that happens, I'm gonna like just go into rom-com. That's all I'm gonna watch. That's it. No more sci-fi for me because it'll be ruined. The leading theory for a while until I forgot who it was that deflated the theory was that I thought it was gonna be Darth Plagueis. You know, the one who. The one who birthed Emperor Palpatine.
Well, but, you know, the theory on it is it's a good theory for the Darth Plagueis. I mean, that, you know, Palpatine killed Plagueis, but Plagueis actually survives, and that Snoke, you know. Right. There's now rumors that there was a split when Anakin went to the Force. There was a split between his actual light side and his dark side. And Snoke is Darth Vader. That's the essence of Darth Vader, brewed into one Force ghost.
Wow. That's reaching. I mean, it's good writing. You know, it's good theory, but, yeah.
Yeah. The Plagueis makes more sense, though. I mean, you know, just the understanding that maybe he did survive his death.
Right. But I mean, you know, that would be an interesting arc in a story of redemption. Is that, you know, he became redeemed, but does that mean that he's fallen again? That sort of thing. So, yeah. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, one aspect of Force Awakens that I hadn't even thought of, that I saw it on Facebook. I think you might have seen it on my feed, Daniel. Is there was this comic that was drawn about Chewbacca, right? And it was like the drastic scene that we see, okay, so we won't say what happens, but there's a drastic scene, there's a gut punch that happens. And nobody thinks about what that meant to Chewbacca, who had been there since the beginning, right? When Luke and Leia are together and all that stuff, and then things happen, you know, it's like, he's been there the whole time and he knows these guys.
So yeah, I didn't get a chance to see that, so I didn't look at that. I've been trying to do a breather from Facebook lately, so I've been avoiding Facebook for a while. So
yeah, I do apologize. Yeah, Mike and I were talking about that too. Is like, I'm so late to the game when it comes to social media. I'm like 10 years late to the game, or however many years you want to call it. But I've got such a narrow portal into social media that at this point it hasn't become a problem, but because of cautionary tales from folks like Mike and like you and other guys out there, I know not to extend my feelers out much further than I've already done. So,
well, yeah. You know, I was actually talking to a friend of mine who used to work at Google, and he works in the IT sector out in Silicon Valley, and he's a few years younger than me, and he actually pointed out that I'm at that cusp age where, that either my generation really likes social media or they really hate it. And I've always kind of been in between because I grew up, my computer usage was I started on bulletin boards, you know, back in the 90s. I started on bulletin boards playing bulletin board games. And then when the internet came along to where it was cheap enough for me to afford it, I switched to that, you know, and I was kind of used to it. So I guess that's why I'm sort of in the middle.
Yeah, we'd be sneaking into our math lab and hitting the BBSs when we were there. I think that's why we love Shadowrun so much, because it was like this technology that was like right there. It was just right there. Yeah.
Playing some Legend of the Red Dragon.
Nice. That's reaching back there, man. When Prince of Persia came out, and it just like, it was an actual game and all that stuff. I was like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of games, let's transition a little bit. We've spent some time in a galaxy far, far away, and Star Wars. So, what have you been playing lately? What have you gotten into?
As I pointed out, I have been playing a lot of Yahtzee on my phone. And for you all that don't know me, I'm a dice addict, and Yahtzee has always been one of my favorite games. And growing up, I played it all the time with my mom. And if you don't know the history of Yahtzee, it's actually the clean version, I guess the best way to put it, of poker dice. Yeah. And poker dice, a lot of people are like, well, it's poker. I don't play poker, you know. And you know, so they changed it to Yahtzee. They're using standard D6s. And right. And I've also been playing a lot of Sushi Go. I got it for Christmas, and it seems that every time my life group comes over, that's all we do is play Sushi Go. It's addictive. It is. It's, you know, you're waiting for the next hand, hoping that you have that piece of sashimi that you need, and then when somebody hands you that, and all you have is maki rolls, and you don't want maki rolls.
No, it's worthless. Worthless.
And then you realize you didn't put out pudding and somebody else did and you just lost 6 points.
Nice. Well, that was like, that Sushi Go is actually the first game that I bought. And, you know, we went to the Big Red symbol store and it was like $18, $15. It was really super cheap. And, you know, I was like, honey, you know, I was with my wife. I said, honey, you want to try this out, you know? And she's like, yeah, okay, I'll try it. I like sushi. And I'm like, well, it's a card game, but we don't get to eat sushi. And she's like, no. And I'm like, no, let's go eat some sushi. So we ended up having sushi and then playing Sushi Go for the first time. And realized that having a lazy Susan on the table would be super awesome. You know, like, well, when you get multiple people, yeah, you can just pass the cards. It'd be sick.
Or having sushi while you're playing Sushi Go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we did that. That's what we did. It's very awesome.
I was kind of sneaky about getting this card game because we have a Chinese Christmas or whatever, where you buy a present and then you start doing the gift exchange for my wife's family. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, I'm going to buy two games that I know are awesome and I've been wanting myself, and I'm going to put them into the pot. So I bought Sushi Go and Zombie Dice. And, you know, nice. I picked a really low number, so I got to go first. And, you know, nobody else wanted to steal that present from me. So I think I lucked out. Everybody's like, well, Daniel's got the worst gift. I'm like, no, I'm actually having fun with my gift. My wife actually likes it.
That's a good gift. you won on that one.
Yeah, I know.
Cool, man. Well, you know, for me, to be honest, I've been like swamped in role playing game world, and I know play the dun 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 music because everybody out there knows it's kind of my primary brain focus is role playing games, and I've been kind of getting myself into the board gaming world lately. And by the way, I did tell the story of how you betrayed me in Dead of Winter, so that's that's out there in the internets. They know that you're a traitor and. You know, you can't be trusted. So,
well, you know, that was my first time playing that game too. So,
and the first time you lied, I think not, because you were very good at it.
So forget, I didn't say that was the first time I've ever lied, but it was the first time I ever played that game, and it was a really good game. So, and you know, you mentioned the whole RPGs. I mean, you know, that's my background too, is mainly RPGs. I've just really started getting into board games in the last year or so.
Yeah. Well, it's a fun diversion. Well, I don't want to say diversion. That's a bad way to say it, but it's a great option to have, to be able to say, you know what? I don't really feel like having to create an entire world or read an entire book to get a game prep or something. I'd like to just put a board down, get some meeples out there and start playing and have fun with my friends. So, yeah. So lately I've been, you know, doing a lot of Victoriana prep. We've had a bit of a hiatus for the time being where, you know, the holidays and everything coming up. So we actually have a game as of this recording. We've got a game in about 2 days, but we'll get some new releases out there on the YouTube channel shortly. Other stuff I've been doing, I've actually started getting into Dungeon World, which is kind of it's a variation of the Apocalypse World engine for a fantasy setting. And that's been a lot of fun. Got a great deal on Humble Bundle or Bundle of Holding.
Yeah, I've been tempted to buy that. I've been looking at it every day, and I know I've got like a couple of hours left. And I'm like, it's only $6.95, and you get all the basic stuff you need to play. And then for an extra $17, you get the rest of it.
Yep.
And I haven't brought myself to it yet. And I know I'll probably will end up kicking myself if I let it go and not get it.
Well, it's one of those symptoms. It's one of those systems that comes around ever so often in that Bundle of Holding. They'll have it up there again for a sale, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But Yeah, so I've been kind of dwelling in that world. I made a kind of a brief announcement last episode that I'm working on a Stars Without Numbers persistent universe thing. So to try and get those time-starved people out there who want to do some role-playing games but don't have time for a full-on campaign, it's basically a series of one-shots in a single universe. So it kind of lends itself to folks without time. So that's been kind of my universe lately, is doing that.
I'm really excited about the Stars Without Numbers, because I'll be playing on that with you as well.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's a fun system, you know. It keeps things simple. It's, you know, kind of like Dungeon World. It lends itself to a lot of narrative. It's that old school type of game where, you know, you've got simple rules. Here's your basic character paths that you can use. You know, you're either, you know, a technical expert, or you're, you know, a military person, or you're what they call a psychic. And it's great. You know, it really lends itself to either a sandbox narrative or to a single campaign, whatever you like. So, yeah, definitely looking forward to that. It'll be a lot of fun. But, the other part of that is, you know, when you're looking at the games industry, you know, all the different kinds of games that are coming out. Mike and I were talking last episode about what we're looking forward to that's coming out here soon. There's actually been some shifts in the industry, you know, board games, role-playing games, that sort of thing. I was reading some news about Asmodee, yes, picking up Mayfair, and obviously that lends itself more to the prominent name of Catan.
Yeah,
getting picked up. And I actually, you refresh my memory with this, is that they also picked up Fantasy Flight.
They merged with Fantasy Flight. I don't know if they've actually
went they merged, that's right.
It's going to be good for the brick and mortar stores, because brick and mortar stores have always had to compete with people with online prices, and as you know, that you can get stuff a lot cheaper at Amazon and Cool Gear Inc. or whatever. I know Mike likes that website. I think
cool, it's yeah, website. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
cool stuff. Cool Stuff Inc. Yeah,
Cool Stuff Inc. And you can get it cheaper there, but from the pricing policy that Asmodee has, is like the price on the internet has to be the same price as on the brick and mortars, from what I gather. That's
I've heard that.
So, and that's going to help our brick and mortars out, but you know, and which actually is a good influx for the industry. I mean, because, you know, I feel sometimes I'll go into my brick and mortar store. Like, my comic shop is called Dwayne's World, and nice. I've been going there since I was 16 years old, or 15, and that's, you know, 22 years. But, like, in the last few years, as I get to where I buy a lot of stuff on the internet, I get to where I don't want to go in there because I feel bad because I'm not giving him money.
Or you feel worse because you're shopping in there and then you go and buy it somewhere else.
Yes, and I'm horrible about that. And, you know,
I've done it too.
That's society now, because we're trying to make the best of our dollar.
Right.
And I know, you know, I've been dealing with him for a long time, and he's worked out a lot of things for me. And I just feel sad that I don't buy a lot of stuff in there. So I try to make myself go more often and buy stuff there, even if I am paying a couple extra dollars for it. And this will help out too. And, you know, Catan has always been like one of the intro games for most places. Like, it's always like the first board game you get when you get into this type of gaming, usually.
Yeah. If it's like when you're witnessing to somebody, here's the Book of John, you know, go forth and read.
Here's the Book of Catan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, well, I have to say, though, that, like, Catan is the board game around which my best friends and their significant others, where we had our first and largest fight, was around a game of Catan.
I remember the first time I've introduced my wife to Catan, and we'd been married for just a little bit over a year.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, "Don't ever bring this game back in my house." And it was a friend's coffee. So
it was a one and done, or what was it? Like, well, did it take a few sessions?
She did not enjoy it at all, and and I actually didn't own a copy for a long time, and you know, I always just borrowed one of my friends, and about a Christmas ago, maybe two Christmases ago, she'd got me a copy of Settlers of Catan. You know, because she saw me gazing more, lovingly at the box at Target, and I'm like,
were you touching it affectionately? Like, yeah, you know, you could come home with me, Catan.
I was like, look at this. This is beautiful. I love it. And I would put it back on the shelf, and then I think my daughter pointed it out to her one time in the toy section, and it got to come home for Christmas one year, and she still wouldn't play it until I actually got my small group to play it. And if you don't know anything about my small group, we all game. We all play board games, and it's great because if we get to a point where we're like, we just need to take a break, and we'll bust out Pandemic or, you know, Ticket to Ride.
And that, you know, that's an often missed opportunity when it comes to small groups. I know we had maybe I'm kind of in the same vein what you're talking about. We had a small group that we were with for close to 12 years. And because you're around these people so much, not just for that week, but you're talking with them, you're praying about them, that sort of thing. And you really get to know these folks. And when your point of contact is always the same thing, which is wonderful, you know, you're discussing the Bible, and I don't want to diminish that. But sometimes, like you said, you need a breather. It's always great to have that, you know, unplug, that detachment that you can just say, okay, you know what, let's just, you know, go out to dinner, or let's go to a movie, or let's game, you know, let's just throw down some dice or something. That's great that you have that option with the group.
Yeah, and they've asked me to do a one-shot for them in Savage Worlds, too, so I'm really excited about that. I've already got it picked out, and I've got to work on my map, and then I should be good to go for them. And I'm actually not going to do it on my normal small group night, because I'm not going to take away from that. And
that's a good idea.
And then, because this will, if I do this right, I'll hook them, and then I'll have another game group, and it'll be awesome.
So at the risk of them being listeners to the podcast, which they may or may not be, I hope they are. What kind of preview can you give on what you're thinking of doing for them? What's going to hook them? What do you think?
Okay, I'm going to use the. As you all know, I love Savage Worlds, and they've got tons of one shots out there for it. And the one I'm going to use is the one that they introduce people to all the time. I can't remember the name of it. It's on the Pinnacle Entertainment Group's website for download, but it can be played with the demo rule set that they give you. So you don't actually have to have all the rules for it. And it's a modern game. It's a modern setting. So, and I'll give you just the setting, is that you're on a bus going into a town. And along the route, people just got picked up going into this town. Well, when the bus gets into town, it breaks down. And what we learn throughout the setting is the town's cursed. And the bus driver actually lives in the town. And there has to be a sacrifice every year of a certain amount of people. And so you're that sacrifice. The bus driver's job is to go out and find people to sacrifice to this ghost and his hunters that live in or that haunt that town. And so everybody goes into their homes and boards themselves up while you're stuck out there wondering what's going on as you're being made as a sacrifice. And so you're being hunted by this ghost, and your job is to destroy the ghost or try to live to the next day.
So this tells me quite a bit about your small group and how tight you feel with them. Do you feel that this is going to put wedges between some of your relationships with the subject matter?
No. We're all good. You know, we're already gamers anyway, and you know, we play a lot of different types of games, and you know, but they don't have a problem with that. I think we would have more of a problem if it would involve something like sex, but you know, the horror genre and stuff like that, it's not bad for us.
No, I'm sitting here smiling at the, because I'm thinking, you know, oh, we're gonna do a. You know, a Savage Worlds fantasy thing where you're walking down a path and you get attacked by goblins or something like that. You know, it's very, very easing into the role-playing game industry. But man, you're just like head first. Boom, here we go.
Yeah, they're going to break into that general store and try to find as many weapons as they can.
Nothing brings a group together more than survival horror. I mean, come on, right? Yeah.
I think the only person I'll probably have issues with is my wife, because she doesn't really like survival horror. Yeah. But you know, she'll probably grudge along for the rest of the group. So,
well, I'm sure you can control that with the imagery and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it sounds like fun, man. Well, you know, I mean, if you think about it too, like, you know, the different types of ways that we get the games, right? You know, there's the board games, there's role-playing games, you know, there's video games, you know, and then now there's places where that all collides.
Yeah.
Right? And we've talked about on the show before how much fun we've had with Tabletop Simulator. And you told me that one of your buddies was making a joke over at Game Church. What was it? He said,
have you got the video game simulator yet? Where you pull out a board and it looks like a computer and you're trying to play a video game on a piece of cardboard? That was Mr. Lee Yoakum, by the way.
Oh, your running mate for the elections, huh?
Oh, yeah. He likes to give me a hard time about it. Because every time Tabletop Simulator goes on sale, I always remind him, because he keeps saying, I'm going to buy it, but he never picks it up when it goes on sale.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and it brings up a viable point, I think, that should be thrown out there, is that, you know, we originally, or at least for me, and I know for Mike, and I have a feeling you too, one of the main reasons we got into this ministry was the face-to-face, the being around a table, sharing love, and just, you know, using board games is kind of like that's the place, that's the stew pot, we get together and we share our love, you know, that's just where we go.
Yeah.
And, you know, how does that differ with a thing like Tabletop Simulator, where you're taking the board game, you're putting it into a digital environment, and then you're doing like kind of like what we're doing, you know. Well, I'm in SoCal. You're all the way out in where are you again? You're in Jersey or Florida?
No,
or...
I'm in East Tennessee. Thank you very much.
I'm joking.
You know, and I was asking you earlier too, like, because I was thinking about buying Pandemic on my phone. You know,
that's right. That's right.
And you know, the way to play multiplayer is you pass your tablet around. And is that really board gaming when you're at that point? I mean, you know it. I think when you're sitting around a setting with people and you're still being able to the interaction, that's the gist of it. That's that being there with them and talking, that's the main point. Right. And but with Tabletop Simulator, I think the win for it is the fact that there's sometimes that we can't get out, you know, whether we're right. sick or that we just the weather's bad, we don't want to go somewhere, and we're just really jonesing to play a game or to try out a new game, because that's basically where I try out all my games at, Tabletop Simulator, before I buy it. And
yeah, that's the whole reason I tried out Ashes before I got it, was to be able to say, okay, I really do like this game, yeah. Or Dead for Winter, or Dead of Winter is another one, too.
Yeah, to play those games that are no longer in production, and if you want a copy of it, you got to pay $400 for it.
That's right. So what's like the limitations though? Like for me, like a limitation with Tabletop Simulator is maybe, you know, that direct interaction, you know, as far as like getting responses, visual cues, that sort of thing. I think some of it can kind of be solved by using like a Google Hangout to where you can see each other while you're playing. But
well, yeah, I think for me it's the talking. Usually having team speak up and being able to chat with each other. You know, with a lot of internet games now, I mean, we usually as adults, we turn the chat off because we don't want to hear the kids cussing each other out and yeah. stuff like that. And you know, just being able to sit down and casually play a game and have a conversation with somebody, you right. know, about how their day's going and how they're doing. And you know, I do it a lot with Minecraft. Because I host the Minecraft server for Game Church, and I'll get on there with TeamSpeak, and people just get in there, and we'll just start talking. Right. And, you know, I'll come over to their site since I'm running the show and help them build stuff and give them materials and things like that they might need. But, you know, just having a general conversation with them.
So you're thinking, like, even given some of the limitations of a digital medium, it still is another way. It's another option of making a connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's I mean, it's actually, it's kind of cool too, because it's the only way that really, like, you and I, or perhaps, you know, Perna involving him as well, or Luke, or any of the other En-ROADS regulars, it would take doing something like a tabletop simulator, just because we're scattered to the four winds.
It's the way to have a meeting too. We could play a game as we talk about stuff.
It's actually a very good idea. All right, I will put that on to the minutes of our next En-ROADS board meeting. We'll be doing it on Tabletop Simulator using TeamSpeak. That's what we'll be doing. So say we all. Right now we're done. Well, you mentioned also getting access to old games. I think you have a game in mind.
Yeah. For me, it was HeroQuest. Yeah, that was my first introduction into, I guess, Euro-style gaming.
Like the big boy gaming, you know, outside of Monopoly or whatever. It's just the big boy games.
Yeah. And it was a combination made. It was made by Games Workshop and I believe Milton Bradley. And the reason why we can't get a copy now is because they're still at each other's throats over it. And one won't let the other produce it.
Right.
And they don't want to work together. They don't play well together. So, and, you know, the only way to get it is either pay $400 for a complete set or to play it on Tabletop Simulator.
Or you could go American Picker style and go across the country trying to accumulate a full set, you know.
That I think it would be cheaper than... I think that might actually be cheaper than buying it, so...
No kidding, yeah. Well, Tabletop Simulator has a good representation of it. I mean, it's clean, it's manageable and everything, given all the different pieces and stuff that are there.
Oh, yeah. When I first saw this game, I was 15 years old, and a buddy of mine, his name's Chris Peltier, and he said, dude, I got this new game. I picked it up, and at the time, I went and got it at KB. I was like, okay, so... I went over to his house and he just laid it all out. And I was like, what in the world is going on here? There's so many, I've never seen anything like this before. And you know, we had miniatures, we had little treasure chests and chairs, doors. Yeah.
Why do you need a door?
What the heck? I was like, what the crap? And we played it. We played this game and I was like, this is pretty cool, but we played through every scenario in like 2 days. And I'm like, well, you know, is there anything?
Well, I mean, how? Else? But that's playing like many hours, right? I mean, that's
Well, we didn't have a lot to do. We were 15 at the time. So, and but yeah, you know, this just hooked me. I'm like, well, what else can we do? And then we discovered Dwayne's, and we started going to Dwayne's, and that's when he went to his parents' bedroom and drug out a copy of First Edition Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah, and then, like, I got drug into that. And then also, when going to Dwayne's, we were introduced to Warhammer 40K and Magic the Gathering. And,
oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, that's the holy trinity of comic shops out there. D&D, 40K, and Magic the Gathering.
And then comics sprinkled in there somewhere in plastic shells with cardboard.
Yeah, I'm not a big comic reader, so...
Oh man, I was so into that when I was younger. I've still got like six cases. I actually have that at my mom's place, stuffed in a box, stuffed in the back of the closet where they're nice, high and dry. For some unknown reason, why I keep them, I keep telling myself I'm going to sell them, but I can't bring myself to do it.
Well, so. You know, being in a comic shop, you learn the stories. You know the characters' backstories, listening to people argue about stuff. And, I watched the cartoons and I watched the movies and I was just, you know, I was never really into reading the comics too much. There's a few things I would buy and read, but, you know, other than that, I just didn't get too much into it. So I spent
movies first came out with the mainstream movies, you know, like X-Men and then going into Iron Man, I couldn't. I was the worst person to have in a movie theater. You know, it was to the point my wife wanted to go and see them because her brother got into comics, and so she read them every so often. So she was interested in seeing the films. But then she was just like, Jeff, you've got to shut up. We're in a movie theater. I don't care what this means. I just want to see the film.
Well, a funny joke was when the original Spider-Man, the first one was coming out.
The Maguire trilogy.
Yeah, me and a buddy went to the comic shop that day. And we show up at the comic shop, and we were taken aback when we go in there, and they're playing Monopoly. I'm like, what in the world are y'all doing playing Monopoly? Can't you play, you know, 40K or something else? Like, well, we're going to go to this movie. And it's like 11 o'clock. And it's like, we're going to go to the 2 o'clock movie. And this is really the quickest game we got to play in here. I was like, okay, all right. Nice. You got me on that one.
It's going to take 2 hours to set up anything else that's in the shop. We need to play just Monopoly. Right? Yeah. We're killing time here, son. That's hilarious. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's HeroQuest is a lot of fun. I mean, I'm looking forward to setting aside some time to play with you and on Tabletop Simulator and get a game or two out. But
we've got expansions on there too. So and if anybody else wants to join in and play with this, I'll be happy with that. Just message me.
You know, so. I'm dabbling. I know as of this recording. Mike Perna was able to lock down a location for Tavern Con 2. Insert applause here. It was great. Yeah, exactly. Clap, 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 clap. It was really cool. The first one, it was like a spur of the moment, and still he landed some great folks. He landed some industry people to come in and display their games. And I think now with almost an entire entire season to prepare, I think it's going to be even bigger.
Yeah. I'm actually kind of excited about that. Because I have a tendency to take road trips once I get the permission of my wife and not tell anybody, but now I've totally blown my cover. I'm going to try to show up for Tavern Con and not tell Mike. I'm just going to show up, not even playing it. Just like walk in there with my games and be like, dude, let's play some Mice and Mystics.
Nice. Well, it's not terribly far. It's far, but it's not terribly far from you.
Yeah. It's a couple hours.
But it's reachable, it's attainable and stuff. And the thing was the Tabletop Simulator, the idea of Tavern Con, that sort of thing, it kind of made me think that we could use Tabletop Simulator as a way to have like a digital con, and during that time frame or something. So,
well,
I will try and work something out.
I will tell you the whole concept of a digital con, the Fantasy Grounds, I talk about it from time to time.
You proselytize that stuff.
Yeah. They had a con. Yeah. And it was all online. And it was, you got to join into multiple RPGs and play different RPGs running at the same time. And I thought it was, like, amazing. Like, you have one guy running some Savage Worlds, another guy running 5th Edition Dungeons & Dragons over here, and then you just had to know which IP address to attack into and create your character.
So how do they transition between the games? Is there like a central message board or something that you go to? Yeah,
they have a central forum, and so in the forums they posted like, this is the one that's going on at this time if you want to join in, this is how long it's going to last, and it lasted for about 2 days.
Right.
Yeah, so I think it was a 24-hour top deal since you had people all over the world playing it.
That's great. That's really great.
Pretty cool.
Well, you mentioned, actually, that reminded me, we were talking about companies buying stuff, but then there's the megalith, there's the monolith that's Wizards of the Coast, right?
Yeah.
And they had some pretty cool news the last couple of days. Again, as of this recording, it was about 2 days ago, there was rumblings, and then yesterday it was released, they actually put out their SRD, the source reference document. I mean, it's pretty cool. I mean, they're opening up the gates for writers to start putting adventures together, putting materials together. It's within Forgotten Realms, I think, right?
Yeah, and they're doing it in two different ways, too. They're going to give us the open gaming license like they did in 3rd edition.
Right.
It kind of died out in 4th edition. They wouldn't allow 4th edition to do that.
Right.
But they're also doing the Dungeon Master's Guild.
That's awesome stuff.
And the reasoning this has got my interest piqued is because if you go the route of the Dungeon Master's Guild versus the Open Gaming License, what you're doing is allowing them to put into their Open Bookshelf software your works, and they will make a profit off of it, and you will make a profit off of it.
It's a very fair split, too.
Yeah,
you get 50%.
Yeah,
and then they split 25-25 between the software and then Wizards.
See, and it kind of reminds me of old TSR. When Gygax first had it going, the creators of each individual module set, TSR didn't just say, I'm paying you $10 an hour to create modules. they said, you're going to create a module and you're not going to get paid until it sells. And when it sells, you get X amount of dollars for every copy sold. Right. And you know, that's what kept the good modules coming, was because you had these guys just showing up saying, hey, I want to write some modules. And mm-hmm. and they had some good ideas, and they would put their seal of approval on them. And then they got away from, they started, you know, when Gygax left. And what happened was, I can't remember her name right now, her family owns the Buck Rogers.
They own that licensing.
They own that licensing. But what happened was they turned around and said they bought all the module license from everybody that they could. And they said, okay, we're selling this now and you're not getting a dime because we bought this from you. And that kind of ruined it. Second edition came in through, and it was just kind of horrible for that company. So,
But during those sweet, sweet years, you know, you write a good module and it sells, you'll get paid. And if you write a stinky module, well, you're just not going to get paid for it.
And if you can find first edition modules, man, they still hold water.
Yeah. Oh, they're still great. I mean, they brought back, isn't Lankmar part of that when that split occurred? Yeah. It was still ideas that were birthed out of that era.
Yeah.
And they're bringing it back. They have it for Savage Worlds, I think, and they're going to be, they have it for Fantasy Age, I think it is, that they're putting some adventures out there. So, I mean, yeah. I mean, it's a great time, especially now, to be a dungeon master, or just to be a writer interested in Dungeons and Dragons. I mean, the aspect of being able to write in the Forgotten Realms, you know, arguably the more prolific of the places that they've created, you know, right up there next to Greyhawk. It's really great. It's really awesome. As soon as I read it, I almost felt like I had to like stop what I was doing and like go and search my dungeon master files and like pull out stuff and think, oh, I could put this together, I could put that together. Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, putting a module together, it's not that hard, as long as you know what you're doing. And they're giving you all the tools to do it. I mean, you could take almost any of your campaigns that you've possibly had, and even if they were not in Forgotten Realms, retool them. And push it in Forgotten Realms, you know, and just put it out there for $2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I waste $2 on stuff all the time, just saying, oh, well, this might be good.
It's a good price point. And who knows, you'll get snapped up in a bundle of holding somewhere.
Oh yeah, I know. And then you know, I don't know how that's going to work, because I know that they've never done a bundle of holding, but that'd be interesting if they ever did.
I think the only time I've ever seen Wizards stuff discounted is like on Amazon or something. I think that's because they have a deal.
Well, so. And they've got a pretty good deal one too. I mean, like the manuals are a lot cheaper now than they used to be too. I mean, they're probably about 2/3 of the original price of fourth edition now. So
yeah, I did notice that, which is, at least it's attainable, which is nice. Well, you know, and it's, man, all that history, that's, you know, being able to delve into Forgotten Realms, you know, it's kind of cool. It's an area of the system that's really near to my heart when my crew got together for the first time. And I've mentioned on the podcast, we've done, we started with Rifts for like about 3 sessions and then found that it was way too complicated, but the setting was awesome. Then we went to Shadowrun, then we went into Dungeons and Dragons, and we stayed there for the longest time. And, you know, we've even taken characters that we've had there and kind of retooled them and redeveloped them, and we moved them in the Pathfinder and that sort of thing. And you would think that would be difficult because, you know, you play a certain character a long enough time, you grow in experience, you become level 20 or whatever, and you're done, you move on to some other character. But the group of friends that I have, we only get together like maybe three times a year, maybe 2 or 3 times, where we're in the same room, same time. We've got a long block of time to play. And it's, you know, it makes me, you know, we were talking about connections, right?
Yeah.
And how, you know, you've got your small group that, you know, you guys can, you have that connection there, you have that shared history where you can jump into a game if you feel like you want to disconnect for a little bit and just have that camaraderie. And, you know, when you have good friends like that, it's really cool to see how games have kind of moved in that relationship. And how important they've become to the reasons why you get together. You know, it's the reason, not so much that it's just only games, but it's the reason that, you know, we've pigeonholed this time. Because we game, we need like 4 to 8 hours, and we want to just bit together.
That's right. That's one of the things with the issues that I've always had with cutting out time for gaming with having a family is that my wife doesn't. My wife's a person that enjoys when I spend quality time with her. And right. when I'm not spending quality time with her, she doesn't enjoy that period. So I have to actually schedule my gaming, and we have to alternate our locations because one of my best friends, his wife's the same way, and so we have to every other week we get to play for a set amount of hours, and then this is not my small group, this is my actual RPG group. Right, and then like 1 week will be at my house so I can be there around my wife, and the other week will be at his house so he can be there around his wife, and we have to flip flop it like that. And if we don't, it's just a little hectic. But as the kids get older for us, we get to actually introduce them into that and introduce them into that community to where they can grow and if you do it right, you'll have some great kids that just really appreciate that, plus the community behind it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm in the same boat with you when it comes to our spouses, in that she definitely appreciates how involved I am with gaming and how involved I am with storytelling and that sort of thing, and how it kind of scratches that writing itch in me. But the quality time is important. Making sure that we have that time to give of ourselves, we can bring in some church dialogue here. I mean, that's what God calls us to be, is those leaders in the household, the sacrificial leaders, that we give of ourselves to the relationship. But we kind of crossed a bridge over the holidays, and I didn't mention it during the last broadcast, I don't believe. So if I did, folks, bear with me. But we had one of those get-togethers, one of those rare get-togethers, three times a year, two times a year, whatever. And we're all centralized here. My home is kind of central between where my other friends live, and so we all kind of converge here. We're the only family that doesn't have kids, so it's a little bit quieter. And my wife's definitely willing to have those get-togethers here, but because they're so sporadic, right? It's almost kind of like you're a special ops team trying to like find a target, and you're like, okay, here we gotta go, jump on it. Here comes the time. Here's where we go. Everybody converge. Let's do it. And so it was one of those times, and my buddy, he got a phone call from his mother-in-law's husband, and his mother-in-law had passed away that night before, and he was trying to build up the courage to call, and the first person he called was my best friend, because he didn't want to talk to my best friend's wife, the daughter of the mother who passed away. And so, it was like, when you're with friends and you're not with acquaintances, the first reaction is, what can we do to help?
Right.
What can we do? And so, we all piled into a car. My wife grabbed all the food that she was putting together for our get together, because God bless her, she puts together a great spread when my friends come over. Yeah. And it's just like food, 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 drink, 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 everything. And so we grabbed everything. We hopped in the car, went, drove 45 minutes to my buddy's house, and we were there to be able to, as tragic as an event it was, we were able to share in the event.
Yeah.
And, to some folks, it may sound kind of like an oxymoron to share in a tragedy, but I think, when you're thinking about your friends, it makes sense, right?
Yeah. I'll mention this too. I think what you're talking about right now, sharing in that tragedy, it's very important that we do that. Like, I'm reading a book right now called #Struggles, and it's about being there for people. And this pastor had one of his people at his church had a 3-year-old daughter die, and he went to their house to visit them, and he just sat down and just started crying with them. That's all he did.
Right.
And he just cried with them. And then, he said his worst prayer ever for them and left. And he thought that he just did horribly, because all he did was cry, because he had a daughter the same age. And, but then like a week later, he got a note from them saying that time that he spent with them, relating with them, was like one of the greatest moments that they ever had, because of someone else shared their grief. Yeah. And you know, we're seeing it now in video game form. Yeah, that cancer that's dragon. True.
The dragon cancer. Yeah. Right.
And we're seeing the exact same thing because, you know, as I'm sitting, you know, I've always been like, why am I wanting to play this game that's going to make me cry because I have children? And, you know, again, it's to share in this father's grief. I mean, we watch sad movies. We know we're going to cry. And it's the same reason is we need to share in this person's grief because this person needs it.
Yeah, that game's really been on my radar too. One of my very best friends, you know, it's part of this group that we get together with frequently. You know, he was the first friend that I made when I moved out to Southern California, and he passed away 5 years. It'll be 6 years in April from glioblastoma, from brain cancer. So, I mean, I know it's about this man's child and everything, but I mean, it's obviously going to evoke those emotions. On a personal level, and I think that's why he did it. You know, it's cathartic for himself, but he understands that interaction in a game sense, it invests you. You get invested, and you know, it can be as simple as saying, well, I'm invested in my character and I really like this character in a role-playing game, or you're really invested in my strategy here, and there's an emotional connection there. But the connections that you make around the table are so much stronger than you could possibly know. You know, I think that's why kind of throughout this episode we've been kind of talking a little bit about communication, you know, whether it's around the table or doing it digitally, or, you know, how do we make those connections? And, you know, that's what this whole ministry is about, right?
Yeah.
It's about making those connections around a game space, whatever that game space may be, whether it's in person, it's by the phone, or it's digital or whatever. It's how can you be there for other people in the good times and the bad.
Yeah.
So wow, we were talking around about it, but I didn't know we were going to come back to something that weighty. That's actually it's kind of the way it happens.
Yeah,
yeah. That's the way it happens.
I've been thinking about the game all day, and I didn't really mean to bring it up, but I mean it's
just, no, it's just perfect. That's good timing.
I did want to share something though that somebody said to me yesterday. We introduced a new family into my small group, and for us to do that, that's one of those things where you know, you're opening yourself up completely. It's like you're splitting your chest wide open and letting them look inside. And so this family, the guy, I've been meeting with him for a couple weeks beforehand, because I've kind of been put in a little bit of a mentorship over him at church. And, you know, he said to us last night that it was like, you know, we go to church, but, you know, we don't feel like we fit in because that's just our, you know, the only person he talks to is me. And, you know, I pointed out to him, I said, you've got to realize what the word church means. It's not where we go, it's what we do and who we are. It's the word Ecclesiastes. It's the community that we have. And I pointed to everyone in this group that we had, and I said, this is your church now. This is your church. This small group is your church family. This is the people that you're going to share yourself with. This is the people that are going to be there for you when you need them. Mm-hmm. And you know, we go to this place once a week or three times a week, however many times a week you go to church. And you have these people there, but it's the small interconnections that you plug into. And that, you know, the Western church, the American church has kind of gotten away from for a long time. They're just now getting back to it, is that they go to church Sunday. They get there. They listen to the pastor. And they're thinking, well, I need to get out of here. I need to go get in line at the buffet and get ready to, you know, have lunch. And, you know, and they don't think about other people. And they don't have lunch with other people or spend time with them or break bread with them. And, right. And you know, they got away from that for a long time, to where they're just pulled. Every family is their own little unit. And what we're doing now with small groups and with these ministries like this is that we're taking and we're bringing that community back into the churches. We're trying to fix what we kind of did wrong for 40 years. And that's something that we need to tell people about. That it's, even though a lot of people are like, well, my church doesn't do that. Well, that's great, but you know, there's other churches out there that still do that, and that's why we exist.
Yeah. And you know, it's not a knock to large churches, but it's so important to have that small group feeling, that place where you feel safe, that place where you feel you can communicate and you can be heard. You're not worried about the other person's waiting for their turn to speak. You're there to be yourself and to be with others. I couldn't have put it better than the way you put it. That's awesome, man. But, wow. Ending up on some weighty topics. I think that's the way it flows, man. That's how we do it here. I gotta say that with the aspect of small groups and with the aspect of a gaming culture, that you can almost see that in games itself, you know, where you have that mass market appeal, you have the giant multiplayer, you have the anonymous, you know, we're on this server and, you know, we're all doing our own thing. But, you know, kind of, you know, like with the church and with people, I think, you know, our generation and some of the generations behind us may need to focus on the interpersonal. They need to focus on those connections. So it's at the heart of what we do here at En-ROADS, and you know, it's at the heart of what a lot of folks out there who are listening, I'm sure, are putting into practice.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's something that we also need to instill on our children, because you look at any kids that right now they don't want to have conversations that are vocal. All their conversations now are text. If they can't script their conversation, like I was reading that a lot of, you know, 25 and unders will literally script out their conversation to order a pizza. Wow. And before they even do it, because they're just so used to controlling the conversation that way. They're not used to having an open conversation like this.
Right. Somebody interrupting them or something.
Yeah, like I do all the time.
Well, you know what? I think that's a great place to close it out. I'll interrupt you there.
Okay. Awesome.
No, I'm kidding. But folks out there, you know, if you want to learn a little bit more about what we do at En-ROADS, head on over to our website, enroadsministries.com. You can take a look at what we're doing there. You can connect to pretty much anything that we're doing, whether it's our YouTube channel where we've got some videos out there for role-playing games. Mike Perno is working on his top 10 gaming game list. He's up to 5 now, so you guys got to go out there and catch up with what he's doing before the next one comes out. We'll have some new content coming out here in the next quarter. Come and visit us in the tavern out on Facebook. You can become one of the regulars. It's as easy as a click, and you can be involved with a great group of people that are from all walks of life that just share a common love for gaming and a common love for one another, which I haven't been involved in a more positive group in Facebook ever in my short stint on Facebook, granted, but a very great group of people out there. So how can folks find out a little bit more about what you do, Daniel?
Well, I'm out there. You can just look for me. I'm in the tavern. If you just want to hit me up on Facebook as well, if you want to get in on a game with me or whatnot, just message me on Facebook. I'm out there. I'm easy to find. It's just Daniel Fisher. Just look for the guy usually with the big cheesy grin and a beard.
And a set of dice.
Yeah, usually a set of dice. as you know, I'm a dice addict. And if you have dice questions or dice related questions or anything about history of Dungeons and Dragons or dice, just let me know and I'll answer them for you.
He is the man, folks. He is the man.
I'm obsessed with Dungeons and Dragons and not necessarily the game anymore, but the history of the company of TSR.
Yeah, definitely. All right, guys. Well, as always, remember that God is the game master, and no matter where the dice fall, the game plays on.